Hello and welcome to CJ Evolution, the podcast dedicated to helping criminal justice professionals like you. Now here's your host, fellow CJ Evolutionary, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello everybody, welcome back. Episode 74, CJ Evolution. I'm very excited about our next guest. Mark Miller has a career journey that has included 22 years at IBM, Big Blue, several thriving tech startups, a stint as a high school math teacher, a gig raising funds for the Jewish Community Center, and a near-fatal bicycle accident that changed his perspective forever. I like to call Mark, and I think he would agree, that he's the guy that you go to when you want to change your careers after you've done your primary career and you're looking at the second half of your life. And I thought, as a matter of fact, I know it's great to bring him on because most of us in criminal justice are going to face that point in their careers, myself included. We're going to retire, but people are living longer. You know, they have all this experience, and they go on to other things. So, Mark, thank you, sir, for coming on. I know you're very busy.
Sure, no problem. And I'll counter you that probably many of your folks will never retire.
That's a good point. That's a good point, right? Yeah.
My idea, I don't ever plan to retire. I want to work less on my terms.
I like that. Good time. You're talking about time management, right?
Yes. It's like I said, we've been talking. I'm down here in Mexico. I can run my business from anywhere. I want to be able to control how much I work and when I work.
I like that. Having freedom.
Yes.
Because you talk a little bit about it when I was reading your background. I mean, money is not necessarily going to bring you happiness. Time is the real currency, right?
Oh, very much so. My father was forced into retirement at the age of 59, and Dad had plenty of money. He was an economist in New York Stock Exchange, but he was miserable, and he had plenty of money. Money did not bring him happiness, and so it's like, do I want to retire like Dad? No, not really.
I mean, it might bring you comfort, obviously. Money is important, but it's not necessarily going to bring you happiness, like you said. In fact, I've seen studies, maybe you have, Mark, where, you know, I think they've done studies, I remember reading that there's a threshold of what somebody makes, and I think it's like 70 or 75,000, maybe you know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they're talking about like a salary where once people exceed that threshold, it doesn't necessarily make them more happier.
That's right.
Interesting. Now, Mark, you talk about in your work, you talk about career pivots. What does it mean, you know, when you say career pivot?
What I mean by a career pivot is most of us aren't going to jump from, you know, from being a criminal justice person to being a basket weaver overnight. It just doesn't happen.
Sure.
Most of us, when we do this, depending on where in your career, will be we need to maintain an income. Many of us still have mortgages. And the idea is to do this in incremental pivots. So I'll use the example. Every one of my career changes has been what I refer to as a half-step career change. In other words, I had one foot in the old world, I had one foot in the new world, and I always had a relationship that took me across. In other words, I never did it alone. So developing the right relationships, because put it bluntly, very often some. And it's kind of like I had my bicycle accident when I was at my second startup, by the way. I hit a car head on at 50 miles an hour, and I lived. And I went off, and I had been developing curriculum for high-tech companies, so I went off to high school math. I had to go get certified, but I've been teaching adults for 15 years. Similarly, when I went off to go develop a corporate development program at the J, the Jewish Community Center, which, by the way, being a non-Jew, being the face of a Jewish organization is interesting. But I had been in sales, so going into fundraising isn't this huge leap. It is very different, and I had to learn a lot. But it's making these incremental changes And sometimes you're probably going to do two or three pivots. I've got a couple folks who'll be coming on my podcast over the next couple of months that are on their second or third pivot.
Wow. Because the reality, Mark, and you know this, is that, well, most people aren't going to stay, you know, and I've always been taught, you know, that most people aren't going to stay in their careers that they start out with for the long term anymore. I mean, they're going to have maybe not careers, but they're going to have different jobs, right, throughout their lifetime.
Well, if you look at it, I did a blog post last year called Has Your Job Been Smacked? And SMAC stands for Social Mobile Analytics and Cloud. And if you think your job is not going to get touched by one of those, yeah, you may be smoking something. Because it will. And things are changing so fast that, yeah, all of this stuff is going to change. I mean, the criminal justice system, think of what body cameras are going to do.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
And by the way, body cameras didn't even exist 5 years ago.
True. And a lot of it's, like you said, due to technology.
Yeah. And that's technology. It's the cloud. It's disruptive.
In a good way.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, in fact, I was talking with somebody, it was a Texas Tribune Festival I went to talking about, you know, a lot of the video that's been shot of police officers doing not quite good things. And really all it is everyone's got a video camera now.
Yeah.
Right? And it's going to be even more is when every officer has a video camera on them.
Sure.
Well, and it's like,
I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know.
No. It's the point here is it's going to change the way people do work. It's going to eliminate jobs, and it's going to change the aspects of many jobs.
Now, what steps, Mark, can people take if they're at that stage that they want to make a career pivot or they want to do those incremental steps like you're talking about? How can they do that successfully?
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, the couple of things. I have three pre-steps to making a career pivot. The first one is know thyself. Many of us who are over 50, we have very often changed our behaviors based on how our employers and our professions want us to behave.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use the example. I'm a closet introvert. I'm a phenomenally good public speaker. I can work a networking event with the best. When I walk off stage or I walk out of the room, I'm toast. I am done. I am exhausted. I appear to be an extrovert, but I am not. It's a learned behavior. It's a learned skill. And a lot of us start believing some of the crap that we start. We learn to do things, and then we go, well, I am that. And the reality is, no, you're not. And then start figuring out, okay, one of the other key pieces is what skills do you have and want to carry forward? But more importantly, what skills do you want to leave behind?
That's a good question, yeah.
Right? Because I'll use an example. When I've left technology twice. I am phenomenally good at inhaling really complex technology, spitting it out in curriculum and in videos. I don't want to inhale a single new technology. It makes me want to barf. But I'm good at it.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm really good at it. I don't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece is don't make assumptions. Assumptions are really dangerous. And what I mean by assumptions, in my new book, I've got a chapter on what I call MSU syndrome. And MSU stands for make stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
When we don't know something, we have a tendency to fill the void with stuff we make up in our brain. So I'll use the example. When I went off to teach high school math, I said, God, they have a math teacher shortage. I've been teaching adults for 20 years. I'm an engineer. They'll want me. No, they didn't. They don't want any guy over 40. We don't do what we're told. They really don't. They want very compliant kids coming out of college.
So they can probably mold them to their way.
Yes. And I have lots of examples where they told me to do something and it was really stupid. And I said, nope. Well, it's mandatory. You don't have a choice. I said, I always have a choice.
Exactly.
And by the way, if there's no punishment, you can't make me do it.
And they didn't like that, Mark.
Oh, no, I was very passive aggressive. I just simply, and there's lots of stories about the education system, but the point is, well, similarly, I thought I came out of the corporate world. I had a teenage son heading off to college. I had my wife. I was just going to take the school district's health insurance. Mm-hmm. And I got in there, and I found my out-of-pocket expense was double my COBRA payment. And then when I – because I just assumed, of course. And then I found within Texas school districts, nobody insures their kids and spouses through the school district health policies. They're off – there's a lot of – there are good reasons why they're so expensive. But I just assumed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Which is not good.
Which is not good. And the third is you need to build your tribe. You are not going to do this alone. Particularly when you are going to go off and do something where you're, mm-hmm. you are going to have to really work on both. I call it, those people are going to help you, but I also like to say building a fan club.
Mm-hmm.
When you start to stumble, people who are just going to pick you up and say, go, go, go. You're doing good. Go.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
Well, I think a lot of people think that they can do it on their own. I mean, maybe it's ego. Maybe I don't know. But you, I don't think. I mean, Mark, you're wildly successful. You didn't do it on your own. You had people, like you said, your tribe to help you along the way.
Well, I'll use an example. I started teaching. I taught in an inner city high school. I was teaching Algebra 1, Algebra 2, and I had a really good Algebra 1 mentor, and I was dying teaching Algebra 2. And I finally found Jenna, teacher across the hallway. She was 27. I was old enough to be her father. For about 6-8 weeks, went in there and said, can I have your lessons plans? Yeah. Please. And what I did was, is I would pick up her lesson plans every week, and I stayed 2 days behind her for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So when and there were a couple of times where I picked up her lesson plans and I didn't get it. Mm-hmm. I could go down and watch her. I sucked it up and said, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing.
So it's humility, too. I mean, we have to be humble and realize that, if we're making that, career transition or those pivots, that we have to be humble because we're not going to know everything.
And it was interesting. My at Christmas of my first year of teaching, I gave a $25 gift card to Target to the two teachers that helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have thought that I had just given them the Taj Mahal. and I was just thinking, I just wanted to say thank you.
Yeah.
Right? But nobody does that.
Wow. I mean, how is it different, man? And you kind of hit on it a little bit, Mark. I mean, how is it different managing our careers in our 40s, our 50s, or beyond that earlier in our careers?
Well, number one, when you're 25 and you're a guy and you're stupid, at 25, all us guys, the male brain doesn't finish developing until 25.
Sure.
And, a mortgage, you're probably not married, no kids. There's no risk.
Mm-hmm.
Once you get to, you start. You hit your late 40s and 50s, you're making good money, and you got a, couple $100,000 mortgage, and you're trying to save for your kids' college education. There's a lot more risk there.
Mm-hmm.
And so planning that change out and in both also, at that point, you also have much more experience.
Mm-hmm.
That you can lay back on, that you can. A lot of my clients reflect back on when things were really good, and when things are really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And understand why. Because what you don't want to do is repeat something that you've done that really was bad.
Sure,
so
sure.
I'll use the example. I graduated from college. I went to Northwestern's engineering school. And I started my career at IBM writing word processing software. This is prior to the IBM. And I was sitting with a coding pad, and 8 hours a day I was supposed to code.
Wow.
God make me barf. I have a very short attention span. Well, now fast forward 20 years later, and I had just come out of an IBM briefing center. I was in sales, and I was getting a job.
Mm-hmm.
And what was I doing? I was sitting in a cube writing technical specifications all day.
Jeez.
I had just repeated the same mistake I'd made 20 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I was miserable. It only lasted 9 months. I hated it.
Why do people get, and I'm sure you get this question a lot, why do people just fall in? And this goes into people in criminal justice too. People, you know, tend to live out other people's expectations of what they're supposed to be doing instead of living out their own dreams. And aspirations. You know what I mean? A lot of people, you know, maybe it's changing, but a lot of people, it's like you're conditioned to go to college, you're conditioned, you know, to go get that good job. It doesn't matter if you like it or not, you just got to do it.
Well, as a boomer, I claim I was raised to be an employee, to go work for a father-like company that would sure. take care of me. And after 30 or 40 years, I would ride off into the sunset and I would retire.
Well, those days are gone.
Well, they moved my cheese.
Mm-hmm. The good book.
Then you have Generation X. Those folks between 30 and 50. Those folks largely grew up in broken households. Half of them mm-hmm. had single parent households, and the belief for many of them was, you know what? I'm going to work really hard, and when I'm successful, I'm going to be happy. Well, that didn't work either. So what did we do to our kids? The millennials, we told them, oh, go follow your passion. The money will follow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't work either.
Point, yeah.
I'm 60, and I have run into more people who started professions because either their parents told them to do it, a friend said, boy, you'd be a good salesperson. You should go do that. And they fell into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they did, they just continued doing it. And rather interesting, one of the things that's happening, you know, probably don't see it in the criminal justice system, but B2B, business-to-business sales, that has completely died because people get online and research stuff. You know, the purchasing process, even for complex machinery, has changed dramatically. The sales cycle has changed dramatically.
So now it's just more of it's like B2C now. It's not B2B,
yes.
It's B2C.
Yes. And so,
which is business to consumers, for
yes.
those of you who don't know.
And so it's, you know, all of this is changing. And one of the key pieces is being able to stay ahead of the curve and paying attention to where things are going and not end up landing in some place where, oh my gosh, 5 years from now, it goes away.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, with the fight for 15, people trying to raise the minimum wage, one of the things that one of the outcomes of that will be, by the way, a lot of fast food places are going to probably in the next 2 or 3 years start letting you order your burger on your smartphone.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean that you know, with the technology and the cost,
yeah.
and yeah, makes sense.
And you will eliminate jobs.
Well, they have grocery chains, Mark. You've probably seen this now, where you can get online and order your groceries. And I'm not sure what it does to – I think it just makes it easier. I don't know if they're eliminating jobs, but you can order groceries online now and just go pick it up.
Yes. Well,
so maybe that does eliminate, like, whatever, the point-of-sale people that – you know,
yes.
the cashiers and stuff.
Well, it eliminates, number one, you don't need grocery stores everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll use the example. I had someone's – I belong to a breakfast club. And we have a lot of realtors who come in. And someone was saying, I was served on the board last year. I said, well, if you're own a brick-and-mortar store, what brick-and-mortar store do I go into other than restaurants and grocery stores? I'm sorry, I'm an Amazon Prime addict. And it's like, wow, all of that will change.
Yeah.
And be aware of, if you want to change to something, is it going to exist in 5 years or 10 years?
But how many people, Mark? I mean, you're kind of like the exception, you know, to, I think a lot of people, and I'm not saying you're old, but people that, you know,
yes,
you said you're sitting, no, you're not, you're young, you're 60, but I don't think a lot of, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm just ignorant to this, and I know I'm an ignorant in a lot of things, but I mean, are people in your age group thinking about this stuff? Or I mean, or are they?
Not enough.
I was going to say.
Not nearly enough is the fact that both, it's a combination of number one, the, you know, what professions and what, but second is how you actually go find a new job. It's completely turned 180 degrees, i.e., and this is one of the challenges I presume criminal justice folks have, as I've dealt with a lot of ex-military. They believe that you will be able to go look online, apply for a job, and everyone will play by the rules. And the answer is no, because there are no rules.
True.
I mean, I'll use an example. A lot of big companies post jobs. You know why they post the jobs? They want to collect resumes. There are no real jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They want the resume in the resume database, so when they are ready to hire, they can go actually go find people.
Interesting.
Now, is that fair? Well, what's the definition of fair?
I was going to say, what's fair?
You know, and it's, you know, today so many companies go out and source talent, and that is they're going looking for the best people for a job, and they're doing this by searching the internet. They're working through referrals from their own company, and by the way, they don't ever post a job, and they're not limited to people who are looking for a job. They're looking for the best candidate, and they don't care whether you're looking for a job or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you know, they're, you know, this is big data. They're looking for people.
Now, you talk about a generational echo effect, and how does it explain the current millennial generation's behaviors, workplace behaviors?
Okay. The way I like to explain this is when you take – when anybody leaves home, you do one of two things. You either do exactly what your parents told you to do, or you do the exact opposite. Another way to think about this is if someone's raising kids and you ask them, are you raising your kids the same way you were raised? At the time, the answer won't be no, it'll be hell no.
Yeah, you're right.
Right? So I'll use the example. My parents' generation, my father served in World War II. They grew up through the Depression. They understood deprivation. By the way, they believed in big government. Because every male in that generation served in the military. My generation, the baby boomers, we went through Vietnam and Watergate. And we spent every last dime we could. Because the number one technology change that affected baby boomers was 1969. Visa credit card.
Ah, interesting.
Okay. Now, similarly, we were hyper-competitive, right? We were very private. So what do we do to our kids? Our kids created Facebook. We made sure everyone had a trophy. Everyone got a blue ribbon. Facts.
It's true, yeah.
And so I'll use the example, the silent generation. Those born between 25 and 45, very small generation. By the way, very high divorce rates. But primarily this was due to, starting in 1965, there was a major technological change called the pill. And from 65 on, divorce rates soared. So that's why so many Generation X grew up in single-parent households. By the way, Generation X has the lowest divorce rate. They don't get married.
That's interesting.
Oh, you will see this over and over. We ping pong back and forth. And most of it just flat makes sense. But we keep on thinking that these millennials, that they'll look like us. And they're not. They're the opposite of us. So I live in Austin, Texas, where we have a lot of tech startups, and we have some Generation X manager, and he goes, looks at his millennial employee and says, I need you to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the millennial programmer will look at him and say, why? Because I told you to.
Why?
And he goes, why? And you're going, why do they do that? Why? Because we told them to. We told them to ask for everything. We told them to question everything. In a lot of ways, our kids are doing everything we wish we had done.
Interesting.
And it pisses us off.
Now, let's circle back to boomers a little bit.
Sure.
Why should boomers, care? We hit on it a little bit, but why should boomers care about their personal brand? And I'm sure a lot of them out there are going, we're not a brand.
Yes.
Why should they care about this, Mark?
Well, number one, when I graduated from college in the late 70s, IBM came around my campus and interviewed.
Big Blue.
And if you look back 30 years ago, your brand was your reputation. Okay. Mm-hmm. And your reputation largely was based on the people you worked with, who had worked with you, and you developed a reputation. Well, by the way, there you were competing for jobs with people in your neighborhood and in your county. By the way, now you are competing for jobs from anywhere in the world.
Exactly.
I'll use the example. I was talking to my CPA. And he says, yeah, if you bring your taxes into most any other CPA firm in town, he's a solopreneur. He says, they just ship it off to India.
Wow.
It's cheaper.
Yeah, I was going to say it's cheaper, yeah.
And you're competing. And so number one, you're competing against everybody else, and how you are perceived is – now, you can control that. And so I like Jeff Bezos, the CEO of Amazon. He says your personal brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
I like that, yeah.
Well, now it's not just the people who are around you. It's people all over the world. So I'll use the example, my last startup, which was a high-definition video conferencing startup. This was I was there from 2007 to 2011. And I tell you, the number of people who I knew really well, it was amazing. And we hardly ever really ever met face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, look, you and I right now, we're talking over a free piece of software called Skype.
That's true, yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
And you found me through other social media vehicles. It's... You have to control your own messaging.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's,
or people will control it for you.
You got it. And it's no longer, don't tell me that you're good and know what you're doing. Show me that you know your stuff. Which means going out, putting collateral on your LinkedIn profile. Writing. I mean, I've got a client in Germany right now we've rebranded him, and he's written a 23-page white paper that's getting him speaking gigs, which is then going to hopefully then transform what he does for a living.
It's amazing. Mark, can you talk a little bit about your book?
Sure.
I want you to kind of talk about that and explain the five steps that, different professionals, mainly criminal justice professionals, can do towards their next career pivot. I know I just threw a lot at you.
Sure. So one of the key aspects is, again, like we talked about, you got to know thyself. I tell you, so many of us, as we reach, I won't say our golden years, but as we get a little bit older, or as we reach what I refer to as the second half of life, we really need to understand that we need to understand how we are perceived and then work through it. The second thing, which I talked about before, is build your tribe. You're not going to do this alone.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And by the way, I look as a tribe is those people who, if you went to and asked for a favor, would reliably deliver.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
The third is, again, we talked about donuts. They're dangerous. The fourth is you need to network strategically. These days, I don't attend networking events anymore. I'll use the example. I've got a client, a 65-year-old client, moved to Austin, and she's got a history in working with home builders in California. And she's typical. She husband died. She moved to be closer to her son. And what we did was we figured out we have Keller Williams headquarters in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
I got various introductions for her, and we got her introduced to the head of HR at Keller Williams.
Wow.
And now that person is now making introductions for her. And it's all about, I mean, I didn't randomly, we figured out who did we need to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, this is to look at, is look at yourself as a consultant. You solve problems for your employer. Understand what those problems are, and then who has those problems?
Because
they're the ones who want you.
Sure.
And then strategically go after those folks and meet the right people. And,
so what would you do? Oh, go ahead.
And the last thing is you got to ask for help. You are not going to do this by yourself. And I admit I'm a guy. I don't like asking for directions.
Well, I was just thinking about, you know, I'm a cop, you know, what do you say to the guy out there or the female officer or criminal justice professional that says, you know, this is the only thing I know how to do, you know, and a lot of it is like what you said about being an introvert. I don't know if I'll be successful in something else. So I really want to get out and make that career pivot, but I'm stuck because I don't know if I could do anything else.
Well, number one, I would start talking to every police officer who had gotten out and what the hell had they done?
True.
Right?
True, yeah.
There are people who have gone before you. What did they do? So I call this looking for people who look, taste, and smell like you.
I like that.
Right?
Yeah.
And what did they do? I love to learn from other people's mistakes. So I'll use the example. I had a rather interesting one. I had a guy call me up, and he had been He had a PhD in linguistics. He had been in Africa for the last 10 years translating Bibles into various obscure languages. Very, very mission-driven. In other words, the religious part was very important to him. And they had come back to the U.S. because the wife and the kids and their family issues. And he's going, well, what do I do now? I said, I would get online, I'd search for everybody with a PhD in linguistics for the top 10 schools in the country who are maybe your age, who have religion, philosophy, and other keywords in their profile.
Mm-hmm.
And then what the hell are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
And where are they working? And what can you learn from them? And then you reach out to these people. You ask for advice, insights, and mm-hmm. recommendations. By the way, when you ask for advice, it's a compliment.
Mm-hmm.
People will rarely turn you down. And by the way, if they do turn you down, they're jerks. You don't want to talk to them anyway.
Well, and it's like you said, Mark. I mean, you even said that you're an introvert by nature. So if we want to get ahead, the reason you got ahead is because you broke out of that shell and you became an extrovert to get what you want. You knew that you needed to do things different. You couldn't stay in that shell. So
right.
you had to be an extrovert to some extent.
Well, it's rather interesting. I claim doing networking the way one-on-one, learning the process. Mm-hmm. And by the way, introverts are actually the best networkers because they know how to listen.
That's a good point. I've heard that before because they can sit there and be quiet.
Well, it's similar is when you're out looking, is impress people by asking really good questions.
Yeah.
Because one of the things what you're doing is you're kind of, I like to say, you're digging for, well, it in the criminal justice system, a lot of what you're doing when you talk to people is you're trying to uncover things.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing that by asking good questions.
And listening, like you said.
And listening.
Yeah.
And paying attention. Same thing here. You know, it's kind of like, I'll use the example. I get people who say, you know what, I want to go work for Apple. And I go, and how do you know that? Oh, they produce such great products. And how do you know it's a decent place to work? Well, I really don't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, go find somebody who's working there, particularly in the location, because, by the way, certain parts of Apple are real sweatshops. And, you know, go dig out the facts.
Mm-hmm.
Stay a good detective.
And in this day and age, Mark, we have the technology to do it.
Oh, yes.
So it makes it a lot easier from when my dad was growing up, your parents were growing up. When I was growing up, we didn't have the technology. And so it's easier now than ever
sure. To
get ahead.
So here, let me give you a good example. If you're going to go, if you're saying, you know, I'm interested in Company A, I would want you to find three people who are doing the kind of work you're doing who have left Company A.
Mm-hmm.
And ask them, why'd you leave? And by the way, you'll get authentic responses from people.
Oh, I believe it.
And if they suddenly say, yeah, I just got a better opportunity someplace else, okay. I had one place where we reached out to three people, and why did they leave? And they all said, oh, the place had a toxic work environment. Okay.
It seems to be a common theme these days.
Wipe that off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's... Again, it's getting the facts. Don't assume, and actually understand, but also understand what's important to you.
It's like you said, Mark. Knowing thyself.
Yeah,
is the first thing.
I'm a Berkman consultant. I use the Berkman assessment. I use it to literally. I'll poke in your underbelly, and I'll take you back to the great times and the horrible times. And through that, I have found, boy, that I've done a lot of nasty stuff to myself. And two, I can understand why certain jobs that I was successful and you wouldn't think I was because I found coping mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use the example. I am very low change, which means don't interrupt me and don't screw with my schedule. And I had a job back in the 80s where I ran a help desk. I supported 500 mechanical engineers. I was interrupted all the time.
Wow.
And the reality was, when a problem came in, I had total control when it got fixed. And no one ever questioned that. You were a nice person to me, you went to the top of the list. You were a jerk, you went to the bottom of the list. And I now realize that's how I coped.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. I also understand now why when I'm sitting at my desk and my wife's sitting at the other side of the room here and when I'm sitting in deep in thought and she just walks in the room and blurts something out, it really pisses me off.
Yeah.
I understand that now.
Now, what – everything, it starts with, you know, whether it's a career pivot or change and – direction in your life. I mean, it starts with good communication. Mark, can you give us some maybe one or two communication strategies
sure.
that you can give the listeners?
One of the things I do with my clients is we'll come up with a top 10 needs, and then we will develop open-ended questions. And an open-ended question that cannot be answered yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who, what, when, why, and where. And the idea is you ask the question and you know what you're listening for. You know, I'll use myself as an example. I don't deal well with bosses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people telling me what to do. So if I said, tell me about your management style, and if they came back and said, we're going to measure you every week, I know to go, bye. I'm not interested. And so, you know, it's knowing when you're having – being armed with a set of questions so that you know how to dig. and you know exactly what the key, what you want to hear and what you don't want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can make then you can make educated decisions. I had one guy who decided he took a retirement package from one of the major networking companies, and he wanted to be a butcher. So he,
well, that's kind of quite a career change right there.
So he took some animal husbandry classes, and what he did was really smart. He took a seasonal job in the meat department at Whole Foods. Whole Foods headquarters is located in Austin. And you know what? He discovered he couldn't tolerate being on his feet 8 hours a day. That's an important lesson, and he learned it early.
Mm-hmm. But didn't you think he would have thought about that before?
Oh, no. You'd be surprised. I'm a real high-energy guy, so when I went off to teach high school math, I had no problem. I had a lot of folks in my cohort who were, I was telling them, I said, you need good shoes. I had a couple of women in the clutch. I said, you got to get rid of those high heels. You will not, you won't survive. Really? You're going to be on your feet all day.
Mark. Amazing.
So I've got several clients, and we've seen this before, who take jobs at any one of the big box stores. And two things happen. Number one, they're over 50 and they're on concrete floors all day. It wears them out. Second is most of these companies use just-in-time scheduling, mm-hmm. which means they don't know their schedule from week to week.
God, how could they do that?
Oh, Walmart started it, and they're actually the first ones to back away from it. But I've got a guy on the East Coast who can't buy theater tickets 3 weeks ahead of time because he doesn't know whether he can have the day off.
That's great. I've heard of just-in-time inventory,
but
I haven't heard of just-in-time scheduling.
Oh, Home Depot, Lowe's, Trader Joe's, all the big box stores. And what it allows them to do is take both part-time and full-time people and people who are working 25 hours a week and fit them all together and make it look like full-time employment. Walmart was the first one to do that, and.
Amazing.
And who it really wreaks havoc on is parents, because they have a really hard time figuring out child care.
So all you criminal justice people out there that are looking for a career pivot, you got to think about this stuff before you do it. No matter what you.
You betcha. I imagine criminal justice people are used to working flexible shifts.
Well, they are, a lot of people and I can't speak for, all departments. I can speak for mine. We're on a set schedule for a certain period of time.
Yes.
So we get acclimated to that schedule. But then, we run three shifts, usually a day shift, a swing shift, and then a graveyard shift. Now, some departments might be different, but, we don't do this, just in time scheduling you have to have a life. You have to be able to plan stuff. So, it doesn't. It's tough work, obviously, but we do have a set schedule for the most part, for a certain period of time, usually a long period of time.
Yep.
And then at a period, we switch and we change up. So,
which, by the way, having a consistent schedule is actually very healthy.
Oh, yeah. It's good for your health. And they've done many studies out there. And, shift work is hard enough on your health. And especially like when you're working at night, it throws off your rhythms and everything. So. Every bit helps. it's still a tough job. But hey, Mark, if listeners want to reach out to you, sir, you're just a ton of amazing advice and suggestions that you've given us this show. How can they find you, sir?
Go to careerpivot.com, and you can either hit the contact me button or there's a contact form at the bottom of just about every page. And, I'm easy to get a hold of. And you know what? I have a phone number on the top of the page.
Wow, a phone number.
A real phone number.
Now, is that a landline, Mark, or is it a cell phone?
Actually, it's a Google Voice number.
Oh, there you go.
And I direct it to the appropriate phone.
Any other advice or suggestions you want to add, sir, before we wrap up?
Well, it's again, the biggest challenge I've seen with folks coming out of structured environments like criminal justice, like the military, is understanding that the rest of the world doesn't work the same way you do.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, when you start getting out of that, there are no rules. Mm-hmm. And you have to understand that, you know, it's I've seen this with ex-military where they have their own vocabulary. By the way, I've seen it also with people coming out of IBM and General Motors who have lived in all-encompassing corporate environments. Is the world is different out there, and you have to be willing to – you're going to have to willing to go out and discover the fact that it's different.
And it's constantly changing, Mark. Have to be able to be – you have to be able to adapt.
Yep.
Amazing.
And
Mark.
And go pick up my book. I have my new book coming out. It'll be on Amazon for pre-order on March 15th. It's Repurpose Your Career, A Practical Guide for the Second Half of Life.
And it'll Mark, I appreciate it, sir.
And I said the plan is to have it out on April 15th. I'm doing a celebration.
Tax day. Well, Mark, I appreciate you coming on the show, sir. Thank you. I know you're a very busy man. Everybody, please reach out to Mark. If you're in that stage where you want to make that career transition, you want to make those career pivot, go to careerpivot.com. Reach out to Mark. He'd be happy to help you. Mark, thank you so much,
sir. And make sure and listen to my podcast, too.
Exactly. Listen to his podcast. So, Mark, thank you, sir, for coming on
the
show.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to CJ Evolution. Be sure to head over to iTunes and rate and review the podcast and reach out to Patrick on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Anchor, or Snapchat. We'll see you next time on CJ Evolution.